Let's get started. 3 minutes in. First, and welcome. Welcome. I haven't met, frankly, all of you. So it's a pleasure to meet you virtually. I suspect you're getting that statement on almost everything you do this summer. It's a far cry when I was a summer here 19 years ago. I think summers were used largely as an excuse to go get fancy lunches and dinners throughout Chicago. And walking in today, it's actually the first time I've been in the office for 3.5 months. But I was walking in and almost everything's closed. It's kind of sad in a way, because it reminded me of how much fun my summer was here, how much I learned, but also how many great people I met, just frankly, either hanging out at events, meeting them at dinner, meeting them at lunch, whatever it was. It seems so distant ago. So I'm thinking about this meeting here. But really welcome all of you. We really appreciate your efforts to get on, your focus. As a law student, I was probably much less focused than you. I was somewhat bewildered by the whole process. I came from a family that were engineers. I worked in the trading floor before I went to law school. So working at a law firm was quite different for me. It seemed frankly bizarre at times. I remember my dad asking me, how do you record your time to the minute? I said, yeah. He said, that just seems crazy. And I said, yeah, I have to do it every day. And here I am 19 years later. Still recording my time to the minute every day. But we wanted to give you an overview of our group. I serve as chair of the LGE group, as we call it. You'll come to know that Baker is the land of acronyms. In fact, as a summer associate, I worked for a woman who was named Christine Lagarde, who was at the time the chair of our firm. My first summer assignment was actually someone said, I'm glad you wore a suit today this week because you're going to go see Christine. And I said, who's Christine? And they said, Christine Lagarde. She's the chairwoman of the firm. I said, oh, okay, better bring a notebook. But and she's gone on to many other acronyms as chairing the IMT and then also now the European Central Bank or the ECB. But we're just simply the LGE, litigation and government enforcement. What does that mean? Why do we have litigation and government enforcement? Why aren't we just called the litigation group? Because we do a lot of different things and we kind of break down into two layers that Maurice and Teresa will help with. But on one hand, we do litigation, what you kind of are trained to do as a law student. And by the way, when I was a summer, I actually worked in the corporate and securities group. So for all of those of you who are worried about where you're going to end up, when I was a fifth year, I came to the conclusion that there were too many happy deals and I wanted to go on to the dark side of things and I switched to litigation. So worry is the long and the short of it. But the bottom line is we do litigation, sort of traditional litigation. We have different subgroups that I'll talk about in a second, but everything's soup to nuts. International arbitrations in Paris, appearing in Cook County Circuit Court here in Chicago. Maurice has just appeared in a federal court in Tennessee. All those things we handle, you know, if you will, that are contentious. The other aspect that we do generally follows the line of government enforcement. Now, these may be contentious and may end up in court, but oftentimes it may involve internal investigations. So for example, bulk of my practice is in Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. Sometimes it goes to court, but more often than not, it's really more of an internal investigation and dealing with regulators. That's on our GE side. So broadly speaking, we cover all those areas. We touch on everything. You know, our group fundamentally really covers almost every single aspect that you run into in the law. Why? Because we're a litigious society. Almost everything we talk about, whether it's privacy, and you'll hear from Teresa, whether it's human rights issues, whether it's just a breach of contract, all those things inevitably go to court, or they have the potential of going to court, and that's where our group kind of kicks in. So we really interact with a lot of the different groups, whether it's tax, I'm in a case right now with tax funding and a fight over NOLs, whether it's corporate, sort of my old stomping grounds, whether it's corporate governance or actual deal litigation, or just frankly corporate mechanics and other issues, down to sort of straight claims that come in directly to us because they're framed as just that. You know, I received a complaint. That's our group. So within our group, we try to cover different areas, both from a substantive standpoint and a marketing standpoint externally, but also internally from a substantive standpoint and a training standpoint. So to make sure that we're focusing on the right things. And we really kind of run the gamut from sort of commercial litigation, which covers, again, everything that you would sort of traditionally think is litigation, to class actions that Teresa will talk about in a second. Kind of, again, a slight variant, and it overlaps, obviously, with other groups. But has a narrower focus in the sense of really looking at what is a particular risk and liability to many of our clients. Government enforcement, which is just that, the government enforcing things, but it usually encompasses in our international world, a huge focus is on FCPA and other international issues that arise in the compliance space. Again, obviously anti-corruption being a big issue, but antitrust, which is its own group, sort of lumps into GE as well. But we also deal with everything from money laundering to trade sanctions work to, again, anything where you find governments enforcing things. Now, I mentioned antitrust. Antitrust is its own standalone group, both the criminal and the civil side. We have a fantastic group there that does a lot of work globally. We have securities litigation, which is relatively new and headed up really out of Los Angeles. It focuses on the civil aspects of securities lit, but obviously covers to some degree as well some overlap with SEC enforcement. We have a financial regulation and enforcement group, which is out of New York. There, they deal directly, most directly with the SEC and its regulation, but they also look at things like broker-dealers, investment advisors, all of those types of financial entities and intermediaries are the purview of that group. And finally, we also have international arbitration, which is exactly what you think it is. It's international and it's arbitration. But that can encompass a variety of different claims. It can be things that are arbitrated under a contract. It could be things that are more state seizures and investment treaty disputes. And finally, we have cybersecurity, probably the most exciting practice. And if I had to tell you what they did, then I'd have to kill you by their own orders, because they're also, quite frankly, often dealing with the NSA, often dealing with government agencies that are at the cutting edge of everything, not just privacy, not just some kid sort of sitting in a room with a hat, you know, hacking into things. Certainly they cover both those, but they really are dealing at the forefront with sort of how information is being used and regulated. So those are all regional. And that's probably like a very boring view of things. Okay, that's like the org chart view of things. So what I'm going to do is turn it over to Teresa and Maurice to talk about not only their experiences. I think Maurice, you were a lateral, but I think Teresa, you were a summer associate as well, slightly after my gravy time during the dot-com boom, which seems a stark contrast to these days. But we're going to talk about kind of their experiences in our group, their particular areas, and frankly, why you should be interested in working in LGE. Don't make the mistake I did and take 6 years to get where you need to be. I'll turn it over. Teresa, Maurice, over to you.
Maurice, I don't know if you want to go first. You want me to go first?
No, go right ahead. You know, Teresa, you know, give them your perspective and maybe a little flavor of the civil side of the house. And I'll give them my perspective and maybe a little practical flavor of government enforcement and investigations. We can
So I would say if Pete gave you kind of the straightforward org chart view, I'll give you the much more exciting view of what litigation is, which I think, you know, one of the reasons that I love this group and also switched to this group from another group. I started in the IP group, actually, but I only made it 3 months before I knew I needed to be a litigator. It's because we get to cover all the different subject areas, really. And also in Baker, litigation isn't just domestic work, it's really international. And so, you know, I started as a summer associate, and I apologize to Allie Kelton and Peter, who already heard me give this story multiple times, I think, since they're our California litigation summer associates. But I started as a summer associate in the Dallas office, and the second half of the summer, I went to the London office for a second half clerkship, and immediately was thrown into a great trial, got to participate with the barristers, learned the names of everybody in litigation in London, and had just a very international experience, which to me was so exciting. And ultimately was just emblematic of what it means to be a lawyer in Baker. So then I spent 6 years as a full-time associate in Dallas, started to work on class actions, which primarily were being filed in California, came out to California to work with Colin Murray, whom you all heard speak this morning, our CEO on the town hall. And then after about 5 years in San Francisco, Palo Alto, moved down to Los Angeles 2 years ago to help open our new office here. So it's been pretty exciting just in terms of the offices where I've worked, but I've also visited Sydney, Hong Kong, Singapore, Beijing, Shanghai, Paris, Munich. I've just been able to go all over the world with Baker, and not just in terms of like fun, but as part of substantive work and litigation. How did I do that? So half of my practice is really cross-border litigation. So with Baker, that usually means we have clients outside the US who are sued in the US, or obviously the reverse of that, which are global clients that have litigation issues outside. So I've been in international arbitrations in Singapore and Hong Kong and Mexico, but also have represented clients from all over the world in the courts of California. Pete wanted me to give a couple of stories about interesting cases. So one of my favorites was a trial that our California team did for Hewlett-Packard, which was an 8-week jury trial in Santa Clara County Court. And it involved a dispute over a software contract in Malaysia. And so that case took us to Kuala Lumpur, Australia, Toronto. We had witnesses all over the world. And it was a great team effort. And it was a very diverse team. We had, three women, three men, a jury pool that was extremely diverse. And so it was a great experience in terms of, really being in the center of the tech industry, but having a global aspect to the case you're defending. And then most recently, we were engaged by Google on a class action in California about loot boxes, which some of you who may be video gamers are very familiar with loot box mechanics. And so that's something we're working on now that's I'm really excited about. And we also have a couple of other class action matters for Booking.com, which is a big global travel platform, and Activision Blizzard, so another gaming tech company, which is really fun being in California and participating with them. Obviously, their businesses are growing and exploding now that everyone is at home and stuck on their gaming consoles more than they were prior to COVID. But so that's kind of a flavor, I guess, from the class action side. I'm also co-chair of our North American class action subgroup. It's not just in California, but all over the country and even globally. In Toronto, we have a class action practitioner or practice there. And also in Europe, we are starting to build a class action practice as the idea starts to take hold in Europe. And so that part of the practice is pretty exciting, but also very global. So Pete, I think that's kind of my summary of how I view our practice and why I like it so much. Maybe Maurice, I'll pass it to you for the exciting kind of government enforcement.
Yeah, well, welcome everybody. As Pete started, doing this by Zoom is, it's a little flavor that's different. Takes a little bit interpersonal meeting out of it. But I do find that these Zoom calls, in its own way, allow for an intimacy and exposure and getting to know a wider range of you guys. I probably would have given an address like this to the summer associates in the DC office. I'm managing partner of our Washington DC office. Some of you have already heard from me and spoke to me already. And I get an opportunity to address all of you across the region. So that I'm thankful for. I joined Baker McKenzie 5 years ago from McGuire Woods, which is pretty much a national firm. And Baker McKenzie is an international firm and is a many of you, made those considerations as you thought about what type of organization you wanted to be a part of going forward in the future. And I pretty much do the same thing here that I do there. However, the demographic and the dynamic of this being a global firm changes a little bit. And Teresa gave you a little bit of flavor. I do a lot of False Claims Act litigation and government enforcement internal investigations. And the client base at my former firm were domestic clients primarily with those major issues. But when I came here to Baker McKenzie, while the subject matter was similar, you know, my time schedule changed. You know, a typical day for me, you know, may start dealing with a client in a government investigation or internal investigation in Europe. Therefore, you know, my day needs to start a little earlier with them being 5 to 6 hours ahead, depending upon where daylight savings time is, to false claims matter with a Korean government contractor, that is being investigated by the DOJ and the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Western District of Tennessee. And so my conference calls there usually start about, 9 or 10 o'clock at night, and last till, whenever, the client is satisfied at about 1 or 2 in the morning. So we certainly, depending upon the matters and investigations, can bookend our days very early in the morning in one time zone and very late at night in another. But it's kind of exciting to represent the interests of our clients, in the Ukraine at 7 a.m. and in Korea, at 11. You may take a little siesta in between in the afternoon, but it certainly makes for a very dynamic and interesting day. You know, our government enforcement practice, because we cover so many areas around the globe, has specific areas of expertise. We have a substantial Africa practice with strong supply chain experience and partners and associates with, strong experience within the region, both in sub-Saharan Africa, Western Africa, and Francophone Africa. We have a strong Russian-Ukrainian practice, an expertise that is probably unparalleled around, of any law firm, and we have experts that represent the interests of our clients in that part of Europe. Our Asian practices are, chambers rated and preeminent across Asia, which allows us to leverage that here in the U.S. when they have needs and enforcement needs here in the United States. Our teams are sort of ready to support them. So, the where our government enforcement practice takes us around the globe, really changes from 1 month to the next, from one matter to the next, which makes the practice very interesting. So when you overlay that, on top of Pete's great overview about the different subject areas and subject matter areas in our government enforcement investigations practice, what you're left with combined with, what we're doing on the litigation side is a very dynamic, very interesting global practice that I think all of you, if you're interested in pursuing a career in the litigation and government enforcement group, will find, very rewarding. I know we're almost getting to the top of the hour, so I want to make sure we allow for questions. So I will abbreviate my overview there and see what questions you all may have for Pete, Teresa, or myself.
So we'll open it up to any brave souls. Questions? Anything at all?
I'll ask a question. Hi, I'm Orfe. I'm curious about your international arbitration practice and sort of what strengths it has and where most of that activity is based in North America.
Great question. Traditionally, well, first of all, the strengths of it is number one, sheer scale. I think you probably heard from all of our comments and a couple of closing comments. One of the points I was going to emphasize, why did I come here over, traditional firms in New York or other great firms in Chicago, which are all fantastic firms, why Baker? And one of the reasons, not the only reasons, is everything we do is essentially imbued with international and global issues. It really is. I mean, there's really nothing like it. There are other firms that say they do that, and maybe particularly firms in London. But in the U.S., there's no firm that comes close to, what Maurice said is the average day for all of us. In fact, last night I had to yell at my kids because I was broadcasting live in Tokyo in a podcast with some of our Tokyo partners and tell them be quiet because no one wants to hear you in the background. But from the international arbitration, number one, it's inherently international, and that ties into the scope. When you're dealing with nearly 80 countries of coverage where we actually have offices and full service offices that span a number of industries, that means you're not just simply doing financial arbitrations, or you're not just doing energy. You're really seeing the gamut from everything, as I said, from contract disputes, could be supplier agreement arrangements, could be supply chain issues throughout the chain at various layers, down to seizures of government, seizures of properties by governments. Those can all take a form of arbitration. And I'm going to say that broadly because sometimes they're more formal under certain rules and internationally, as opposed to maybe a contract that says we'll have this rule of arbitration. The focus of it has been traditionally large matters, usually tied to certain industries, in particular oil and gas, energy, tend to have very extremely large matters. In Brazil, we've had several large cases. In Russia, we've had a lot of large cases. Really in the emerging markets where you see people want to use arbitration, again, either as a cover for government expropriation or as a way to mitigate risk of local home court advantages. So you see that across the board. But we've seen everything from software deals to simple supply arrangements, and I'm supplying personal services. Those have all been litigated. We have a team that's truly regional. There's a big practice in New York, traditionally has been for many years. He just retired this year, but Grant Hanesian was a well-known practitioner of the bar. He's actually become an international arbitrator. That was part of his retirement. So, but that's continued down through Mike Morkin here in Chicago, who has a real focus on Taiwan and Asia, to Brendan Cook, Mike and Brendan are the co-chairs of the IA subgroup. Brendan's in Houston, and as you would imagine, in Houston has a very much focus on energy issues as well. But Teresa Michaud's in class actions has done international arbitrations in California. If you were to look to the right where someone's taking a deposition in the room next to me, Mike Duffy has done international arbitrations in Brazil and throughout Latin America because he has his background and total fluency in Spanish. So we really do kind of cover the gamut. I can't say it pigeonholes into one area. It fluxes over time. Some years, usually when you see issues in the particular market or industry, you'll see more disputes coming out of it, or a country that maybe is, again, maybe seizing assets or experiencing some troubled times, you tend to see more disputes come out of that region. So it fluxes over time. But again, that's hopefully answers your question. It's right now, I'd say Brazil, Russia, energy seems to be quite a bit, but given all that's going on and why we're here virtually, we are expecting large increases in this area.
I was wondering if you could expand on what Baker's MDL practice looks like.
Teresa, do you want to take that as class action focus?
Sure, yeah. I'm not familiar with who all in the firm is handling MDLs right at the moment, but we have had a few. In fact, I argued at an MDL hearing here in Los Angeles. I want to say, Allie, it was like a couple of months ago, right before COVID started, on an antitrust class action with the antitrust team that Pete mentioned, who's based out of Washington, D.C. I think we are involved in another MDL antitrust case the case is based in San Francisco. And we had a consumer class action MDL over a winemaker. Our client was a Chilean-based winemaker, and we were in an MDL over that. That case actually ended up being venued in Minnesota, strangely enough, based on too many different winemakers pulled into the case. But so we have had an MDL practice. It's obviously quite different than defending a single class action, because what happens is you often end up working with a lot of co-defense counsel, which is its own animal, but can be very exciting because it just adds another dynamic to the merits of the argument, looking at it from multiple perspectives, multiple clients. So hopefully that answered your question.
And the most recent one that Teresa alluded to is a great example. The case started as a criminal antitrust case. I had to represent the Japanese company that pled guilty. It's all public. It's in the Eastern District of Michigan is where we ultimately settled on our plea. As many of you know, immediately the minute that hit, I think within 7 hours, there were complaints filed already saying that how bad we were from a civil perspective, and those were filed. And now that sort of shifts to Teresa and her team, as well as the antitrust team under Mark Hamer and Creighton Macy. So we all work together, and most of the cases we work on are either big enough or complex enough that you're going to be dealing with multiple layers of us as the case and the dispute moves through different areas of its life cycle. Questions?
I have a question. How does specialization work kind of once you get started as an associate in the litigation?
By the way, it's not, we paid the electric bill, but there's a motion sensor here. So I go from light to dark. So I'm going to answer your question as soon as I click on the light. And there you have it. It's a good question. And Maurice, your thoughts are welcome too. I know we've spoken about it. I had the same question always as an associate. I clerked in the Delaware Court of Chancery. I was in corporate. And I had so that version, and then obviously I switched to litigation, so there was another version layered onto it as well. The answer is, I think you can take one of two paths. First of all, you're not going to be forced per se into saying, like, you know, your first week on the job, declare that you're doing nothing but 34 Act filings the rest of your life. I mean, it doesn't work like that. So let me assure you that. I think there's always, frankly, there's a little bit of a, it kind of fluxes over time in my 19 years. It used to be when I was an associate, people wanted to specialize really early. And so they'd sort of by third year, they wanted to say, all I do is this. I think that's sort of backed off from there now. And I think it's now a cycle where people try to be a little bit more fluid. I think some of the problems and the issues we're dealing with for clients, you know, for cyber, if you'd asked what cyber was 5 years ago, you would have probably gotten a much different answer than you do now. If you'd asked what types of class actions were prevalent 5 years ago, you would have gotten a much different answer than now. In our group, the way we approach it is really, you kind of start with a fundamental basis of core competencies. And that's trial and international investigations, if you said. You know, what are you learning? You're gonna learn how to try a case. That case may be different forms over your career. You may be doing more trade secrets cases 1 year, you may be doing more of this or that. That's not to say that you're totally doing everything under the sun. You're not a single lawyer law firm that just is just doing everything that comes in the door. But you aren't gonna be so pigeonholed as to that. I think also one aspect that I would throw out there is when you get here, you can't script it. I was doing a lot of obviously Delaware corporate litigation given my background. And I walked in the office one night and there was a guy named Bob Tarun who had just lateraled from Latham here. And he did nothing but FCPA. And he said, I needed someone to write something. And I'd heard that he wasn't a nice guy to work for. And so I made up every excuse of why I couldn't do anything for him. But he was persistent. And I ended up working for him. And I ended up becoming not only best friends with him, but my practice today is currently focused on FCPA. In fact, we're the co-authors of the FCPA handbook for the ABA. So the bottom line is you never really know what's going to happen. And you stay open and fluent to really working with people and working on teams. And within reason, I don't think I'm going to take an ERISA case anytime soon. But that's not to say that others in my group won't. And it's the bottom line becomes you kind of a little bit in flux. It's a little bit of push and pull where you want to go. And then also where the teams that you're working on and where the demand for clients is. So Maurice, I don't know if maybe butchered that. Maybe you have a different view and you think you should pick a major from day one, but.
I think that, there is a universal skill set, right, that underpins all of these practices, underpins litigation, civil litigation, and criminal litigation. And I do think that developing the skills that you gain as a, you know, law clerk, you know, I am a big advocate of federal clerkships. For those of you who may be interested in those, I think that, the pursuit of that gives you a broad range of skill sets that will give you great flexibility within a practice like ours, no matter what subject matter you choose. And I do think Pete's right. You should go into it as a summer associate, junior, first year associate, as being open. You know, those first 3 years, I think, is truly exploratory. I think that as a junior associate, you should be getting on global investigations, but you should also be getting on large class action litigation matters with Teresa. And you should be contrasting those experiences as a young associate. And then probably right around your third year associate, you know, you're going to naturally gravitate, you know, to a particular area. Some people, you know, by their energy and excitement, you know, end up self-selecting in that way, or their lack of energy in a particular area self-select. But I think that that's the process. But in those first 3 years, focusing on those universal skills that are going to carry you in interviewing a witness, whether you're handling an arbitration, whether you're doing an internal investigation, or whether you're or you're, you know, just talking to preparing a witness for a deposition, all those skill sets are universal. You know, however, you know, what's also universal is as litigators, as disputes lawyers, we're bringing a case ultimately to a tribunal for a decision, right? And so managing evidence, managing the documents, managing discovery, you know, how we marshal that information, how we strategically assemble that information and package it, you know, both for our internal consumption, for our client's consumption, or the consumption of a jury, or consumption of a judge, consumption of an arbitrator. All those venues sort of change the dynamic, change the perspective, right? But each venue requires a different skill in how you package and present. And so I think the evolution of your development is going to change and sort of narrow into different perspectives, but there's a baseline skill set that you should be investing in as a young associate and developing in this area. So I hope that helps, because it's a process that builds on itself, sort of like a math problem. It's like kind of like, you know, you know, for those who weren't paying attention in the basic level of calculus, you find when you get to A, B, and B, C, there are gaps and you kind of can't catch up. I mean, it's sort of that similar sort of thing. The best litigators, you know, have been really diligent along the way. And you can almost see a fluidity, you know, in how they've grown and how it's sort of built, the skill set built on itself over the years. Is that helpful?
Yeah.
Be mindful of time. I think I'm happy to stay on if others have other questions, or Teresa and Maurice, I think, as well, but.
Yeah, I actually have to jump to a client call.
There's Maurice.
It's great meeting you all. Please, any of you, feel free to reach out to me directly with any follow-up questions. And look forward to you guys having a great summer. Thanks again.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other immediate questions that anyone wants to ask, burning to ask, that must be asked now?
Pete, this is Devin. I was just going to ask a question on behalf of the Summers.
Go ahead, Devin.
You talked about, you know, all the things that you guys do at the principal level. What is it that associates and junior associates, you know, kind of help you guys with on the different projects that you mentioned?
Wow. It's actually a hard question because it's the variety is sort of exponentially increased. Let me answer that with sort of my closing statement. You know, why I came here, one of the main reasons I came here and stayed here for years is we do give real responsibility to associates. I was always paranoid that I was just going to be doing doc reviews somewhere. And, you know, I frankly didn't go to law school to do that. I always wanted to be a lawyer. And in that regard, I wanted to do real legal work and be involved and be part of the team, not just someone who is sort of on the side. And I always felt I got that here, be it on the corporate end. When I was a summer associate, I did a whole deal beginning to end, signing to closing with a partner, just a partner and me. To the litigation end, my first week in the group, I had to go handle dispositive motions. And I remember talking to my co-clerks from other very prestigious firms who'd never been to court. And I said, well, I've already argued probably 9 or 10 motions to dismiss or summary judgment motions. So it was something that I think as an associate, and even as a summer associate, you'll be getting real work. Now, what that means, it could be anything because we do a lot. I cover a lot. I'm here today on going over fact prep for witnesses. You could be probably obviously marshaling, you know, a lot of facts. That could be doc review, you know, it's most basic, but certainly goes beyond that. It goes really to presenting the case, and it goes to what Teresa and Maurice and I were talking about, which is in litigation, we like to think about trying the case from day one. What is the theory of this case? How are we going to win? Who are the witnesses? What are the documents? How are we going to marshal all this together and convince someone that my client is right and the other client is wrong? And knowing someone else, there's a Pete, a Teresa, a Maurice on the other side. And that means working kind of hand in glove. As I look over actually in the other room with a deposition, there's an associate, a third year associate of ours who's fantastic, Patricia Mathey, is sitting there with the partner doing the dep. I think you do a lot of depositions, you do a lot of prep for depositions, and then you start presenting witnesses at deposition fairly young. The other thing I always stress in our training program stress is writing. I write way more, and Teresa, I think, writes way more, and Maurice writes way more than we ever do a trial. I mean, you're writing every day. You're writing briefs, you're writing summaries, you're writing letters to the government, you're writing summaries for clients, you're writing memorandum for other lawyers. Whatever it is. And so as an associate, you will write. I mean, you will write, you know, the traditional legal research memo that you learn about in legal practice in law school. Yes, you will write that. But you'll also be writing motions. You'll also be writing letters to clients. You'll also be writing PowerPoints. Increasingly, it's not just written Word documents. It's Excels, it's PowerPoints, it's other forms, you know, Prezis, it's everything under the sun. And you're doing that obviously on real work. You also probably participate in business development and other work that we're doing that may not necessarily be the traditional billable work for a client. And actually, I should qualify my earlier answer. I said I haven't met all of you. I met one of Ms. Ajam, who was actually working with us in developing and writing the chapter of the ABA book on corporate governance and sustainability. So hello again. I saw you 2 days ago. But the bottom line becomes you'll be writing a lot. And if you ask what you do, I always say there's a premium that comes from good writing, and good writing comes from good thinking and analysis. So that's really as an associate, you know, my view of the group, and again, why I came here, is we're pretty flat. You know, everyone picks up an oar. That may mean maybe, you know, I've certainly organized documents as a partner, you know, getting everything ready, getting set for trial, to knowing the documents, knowing the witness statements, knowing everything there, to knowing the law and the cases, and I expect the associates to do the same. They're really working side by side, and that means you're gonna do a variety of tasks from things that you think, well, gee, that could be pretty mundane. Well, it's probably pretty important. And the other thing is actually, you know, I expect you to get real clinical experience, taking witnesses, taking depths, arguing in court, because that's the only way you're gonna grow as a lawyer. You know, you do those, you have those hard arguments, you have those hard afternoons and evenings, in court, and that's how you learn and grow.
Thanks, Pete. Any other questions?
Well, let me close with these thoughts then, just very briefly. You know, I started to mention why I stayed here. There's really three reasons. One is I was always working on complex problems. And I think you heard Teresa's stories. I mean, Teresa's summary of her case, I know some of the case she was handling, and it was incredibly complex. Some of the motions, some of the practical issues that go into, you know, doing depositions in Bangkok. I mean, it's sort of crazy when you start thinking about the amount of problems that come at you every day here. But that's what I wanted to do, right? I wanted to be there at the most cutting edge issues, the big global issues that matter to clients, and hopefully, you know, practicing my craft. Two, and it seemed kind of as funny, if you had asked me 6 months ago, I would have thought, it's probably not a concern for you, but I wanted to go to a big firm that was international because of financial stability. You know, I think there are a lot of great boutiques, but, you know, there's a lot of risk in that too. When things are good, they're good. When they're bad, they're bad. Baker, you know, has grown up and it's sort of become, I don't want to say that we're immune from financial pressures. Of course we have them. But the reality is, you know, when you have, you're talking about a firm that does full service across all different industries in all different, you know, countries around the world, there's a ton of different benefits that come from that, economically, as well as the freedom of your practice and the scope of your practice. You don't get pigeonholed. The third thing I would say is internationalism, as I talked about, that everything we do, you know, even motions in court that seem fairly domestic, is imbued often with an international aspect. We may be representing a Japanese client in a U.S. antitrust matter. It's a U.S. antitrust matter. It's the Sherman Act. It's the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure, but it's a Japanese client. And there's a lot of different nuances that come from that, again, towards that complexity of the problems. But the real main reason I stayed is always the people. I had a business professor tell me, go where you think you'll succeed. Don't listen to rankings. Listen to where you feel comfortable and you think you're part of a team and valued. And I always felt that from day one here, actually. It's why I've stayed. It's why when I was a summer associate, I was so excited and I came to Baker, and why I stayed for 19 years since. This really comes down to the people. And I think the only way you can do that is really to work with them. Do seek out the assignments, seek out the ones you don't really think. Take the tax case that you thought, I don't really know anything about tax, or I don't really know anything about the FCPA, but try to learn it, try to see it. It's a great time to kind of start seeing not only the different areas of the law, but really also the teams and the people who drive those. And I think you're going to find hopefully what I found, which is we're really full of great, talented lawyers who are also really decent people too, and good friends and partners and colleagues. So if I would urge that, I think there's a particular preponderance of them in our group, I would say that. I love our group, as I think Teresa was saying. It's just all the issues in the world that we deal with are fairly significant, international, and they really kind of come to a head, if you will, amongst our team. So really do welcome any of you, you know, any of your input, help. If you're looking for assignments, email me, email Teresa, email Maurice, and we'll get you involved, and you'll see why we're so excited about our team. Teresa, any final words from you?
I guess just briefly, I would say I remember sitting in your shoes and thinking I will, you know, never have 13 years at one place as a career. That seems crazy, but there's just been so much variety and change, and, you know, the issues that we face are so different from day to day that I feel like it has been, you know, very exciting. And while I, you know, never imagined as a summer associate that I would come this far and make it to principal in the firm and all the steps in between, that it's been a great ride. And I'm obviously really happy to be here, and I love this firm. And as Pete said, you know, it just becomes friends and family, and you really get to know everybody in the group, not just in your office or in your city, but, you know, across the region and across the world. So that's my last statement. I'll let everybody go. I won't hold you any longer.
Don't be strangers. And if you have any other questions, feel free to email us, or if you want to email Devin and get it to us, that's fine. But we're here to answer any questions, and we hope to see you, if it's virtual or otherwise, this summer, depending on what state you're in. And we certainly hope to work with you and get to know you. So really, and thank you again. I think you'll find it's a great and exciting place, and we're glad to have you on board.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.